Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Steve Bloomfield. On today's programme, we're talking London theatre. We have two Christmas-themed plays, one that's rather a lot of fun and the other a little more sobering. Plus, we'll discuss Gemma Arterton's starring role in St. Joan at the Donmar. And talking me through all of these is the theatre and comedy critic for The Times of London, Dominic Maxwell. Dominic, welcome.
Hello.
And almost Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
We can say that. It's, you know, we're ticking off the advent calendars. We're eating lots of chocolate. The trees are up. It's Christmas. We'll talk about Christmas in a bit more detail later on, and a peculiar British Christmas tradition here. But first of all, let's talk about a far more serious play that's on at the National Theatre here in London. It's called Love. Tell us about it.
Yes, and it is serious, but it's one of those plays, I mean, I absolutely loved it. It's probably my play of the year.
Really?
It is very serious, and whenever I describe it, I think, I mustn't sound it too serious, mustn't make it sound too grave, because it's about homelessness, it's about two families in temporary accommodation, sharing that space, which sounds like the most self-punishing, oh, I better go and see it, because it's good for me, and these are important issues. And yes, all of that's true, all the important issues part is true. I think what's remarkable about it is it's densely naturalistic, 90 minutes. The whole theatre is lit by strip lighting. There's not much barrier between the stage and the audience. And you feel like you're in that homeless hostel with these families. And what makes it more like a good Chekhov than a sort of gritty documentary is just the tiny little exchanges, the little sort of, for example, there's one loo for two families and two refugees. And so that becomes a factor that people are queuing for the loo. There's mugs. Whose mug is it? All those little things. And what they've done, it's a devised play, and they've zeroed in on all those things that normally sort of just get brushed over by drama, and that becomes the drama itself.
There seems to have been something of a change of direction at the National since Rufus Norris took over. There seems to be more of an overtly political edge to what he's putting on. Is that fair?
Yes, maybe. This, I think, is a huge success. There are other ones this year, such as The Suicide, which was, again, more sort of socially issue-based, which wasn't a success. Yeah, I think so. I think he's trying to address some of these things, and probably when you go for issues, the hit rate is more variable. I think most... I mean, I went on press night, and it's very rare that you see a bunch of needly old critics standing up in the standing ovation at the end.
Really?
It's very moving. And like I said, I'm going back to the thing, mustn't make it sound too grim. It's also because it's these observations from real life. Yes, you're angered and frustrated with them, that these people are stuck in this position with these kids, amazing kids. But it's got lots of jokes in it. It's got a sense of endurance. It's got a sense of, well, this is awful, but we're going to have to get by.
Has it been, you say it's been a success, do you think it's sort of been watched by the sort of people that would be frustrated and angered by this in the first place? Is it just essentially, I hate to say,
preaching to the choir? Right.
You know, there's always that danger anyway. You can't criticise a theatre for not doing stories about social issues and then criticise them for doing stories about social issues if actually only people going will be those nodding along.
Yeah. Well, I think my point is, and in a way, I don't talk too much about the politics, because I think we sort of take it as a given sitting here now that homelessness is bad, that we wouldn't want families to be living this sort of existence. I think what's great about it is it doesn't just exist as agitprop. It doesn't just exist as, yeah, maybe you come out upset or angry about the political status quo, but actually you look at these people and you think, like you do, as I was saying, in Chekhov or something, you think, well, these are just people like me. I can imagine myself in that situation. And it depicts these people with just enormous wit and grace and detail. So... You can't separate it from the politics, but let's imagine you can. I think it's a really good play, separate from any political point it has to make.
You say it's partly devised, that it's written by Alexander Zeldin. Mm. Tell us about his work.
I can't tell you very much. I know he's quite young, I think he's early 30s. He did another similar play here at the Temporary Theatre called Beyond Caring. I didn't see that one. So my knowledge of him is limited to this. And so limited to this. I think he's amazing. He's got 100% hit rate.
Excellent. Okay, that'll do. Let's move on now across town. Let's head to the Donmar. and the biographical tale of the 15th century French heroine Joan of Arc in the play Saint Joan. The play was first published in 1924. It's been done by many greats in the past, including Joan Plowright. Now Gemma Arterton is taking it on. Someone who is more widely known for her film work, mm-hmm. but has actually done quite a lot of stage.
She's been very busy on the stage recently,
Is she better than the production, perhaps, here?
No, I wouldn't say she's better than the production. I would say she's better than the play.
Okay.
I think the production is a very good stab at it. I think she's fantastic. I think the play is a bit of a bore. Which one should we start with?
Let's start with the play being a bit of a bore.
Well, I like George Bernard Shaw, but he writes really beautifully, but he does write. We do wish he wouldn't write quite so much sometimes. This has been the director Josie Rourke has edited this down. It's still 2 3/4 hours, including the interval.
Okay.
The scenes with Joan in, with Joan dominating, are pretty good. There are lots of moments in which there are, I can't remember how many men there are on stage, let's say about 8 or 10 men sitting around a table debating and pontificating, particularly one, I don't know, half-hour scene just before the interval with the English. You just sit there thinking, oh, God, you know, I could be sitting at home watching a box set. You know, modern telly would have done this in 5 minutes. And all right, I'm being a little bit flip about that. But seriously, there's just no call for it.
They should have been even more brutal then with the script.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Or not done the play?
Well, I guess the reason you do the play is because it gives a great part for an actress, and, you know, there aren't enough of those.
Oh, no, but to reach back 90 years to play it's not
very
good.
I'm not recommending you see it.
Yeah, okay.
If you do go and see it, and it's pretty much sold out, but it's going to be on an NT Live in February. Mm. If you do see it, the reason to see it, for all that there's some very good acting from the male actors, is Gemma Arterton, who has made a very conscious decision to sort of reboot her career, to try for some more serious, more interesting, varied roles. And I think she's excellent as this. I mean, she's 30, but she plays 19 very well. She has that kind of teenage or late teenage mix of... She's girlish, but also defiant, also has that sense of being absolutely certain in what she believes that's harder to hang on to, hopefully, as you get older. She plays her as a country girl with a sort of West Country accent, with a kind of sweetness, but with a kind of this is how it is and why would anyone say otherwise quality about her.
Finally, as we said, it is almost Christmas. It is Christmas. And here in the UK, we have a rather curious tradition, which is panto or pantomimes. Mm-hmm. For those that aren't familiar with a good old-fashioned British panto, could you try to distill what it is?
Yeah, this is a tough one. It is sort of fairy tales meets variety. It is fairy tales done often with cross-dressing. There's something called a dame who takes the main female role. It's a man. It's usually a middle-aged male comedian playing that.
Usually quite large.
Yes, usually quite hairy, perhaps.
Yeah.
And then there are pop songs sometimes factored into all this, into the storytelling, or traditional songs or new songs. There's lots of call and response stuff, which this panto...
Oh, yes, it is. Oh, no, it
isn't. Oh, no, it isn't. Behind you.
He's behind you, yeah.
I think most of the audience don't know why those things are there. Most of the cast don't know, but we all go along because that's the point. It's like a Christmas ritual.
And it's a family thing.
It is a family
People
thing.
Go
Absolutely.
With their families.
Absolutely.
You don't go on a date to the panto.
You don't go on a date. You don't go on your own, unless you're a theatre critic feeling slightly shabby sometimes in a room full of school parties. Yes.
Do you, in fact, when you go as a critic to these, do you go on your own?
I purpose-reared some children so that who are still young enough to go and see these.
And are you able to take them? For,
usually,
if
yeah, unless they're
doing
something inconvenient like being at school or something, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fair enough. Let's talk about then one in particular, Cinderella at the Palladium.
Yeah, and this is a big deal because it's at the Palladium, whatever it is, 2,000-3,000 seats, mega theatre in the heart of town. They haven't had a panto on here for about 30 years. It used to be a big tradition, and I guess then just everyone else started doing it. So they have absolutely flung money at this, and I don't know how many of these... I don't think many of these names will mean much to anyone outside of England, but there is Paul O'Grady, big TV star. There is Julian Clary, camp comedian. There is Count Arthur Strong, a character act. There is Nigel Havers. And if you think Chariots of Fire is the only reference point, well, there is indeed a gag about Chariots of Fire with him rushing off the stage in slow motion to the Chariots of Fire music. It's that kind of
Excellent.
Thing. Everyone takes the mickey out of themselves or out of each other.
And it's soap stars and it's pop stars and it's... Oh, yes. Wasn't that person in that TV show in the 80s?
Yeah, there's Amanda Holden from Britain's Got Talent.
Right.
Is the sort of the most sort of ITV Saturday night person here, I guess. Actually, she's one, the weak link, really. She's got a dead hand with comedy. It's huge. It's almost 3 hours long. The plot is almost irrelevant. There's a very good actress, Natasha J. Barnes, who filled in for Sheridan Smith when she was ill in Funny Girl in the West End earlier. She sort of made her name doing that. She sings beautifully. She acts really well. She's kind of the straight person. She's barely in it, which is a bit of a shame because, like I say, this is kind of a variety night, and all these middle-aged comics come on and do their shtick for 10 minutes. Do it very well, particularly Julian Clary. Julian Clary trades in filthy double entendres. Mm. And if you see him in his own act, well, he's very good, but there's sort of no friction to it because he can say anything. He could. Whereas we're here, where his sort of endless... I'm trying to think how to put this cleanly. But his endless innuendos are kind of inappropriate. And that's part of the fun of them. And then just the sheer quantity and fluidity of them from him makes him enormously enjoyable.
And there's also, there is a serious side to Panto.
Do tell.
No. I'm going to make a serious point about the state of British theatre, which is that for a lot of theatres, particularly outside of London, this is their guaranteed big gates. Bring in the money, bring in the punters. This will help us fund that two-week run of the new play written by someone no one's heard of in March. Or we want to do that serious Chekhov season in the autumn, and I don't know how many people are going to come to it. It brings in the money.
Absolutely. This is slightly different in that it's so big, and it... I guess they don't know if it's going to be... I mean, it is very expensive, I have to say. I loved it. My 8-year-old loved it. I think I probably loved it more than she did just because it's so lacking in sincerity and magic. It's such a mockery. She did like it a lot. I liked it more. Now, like I say, I got in free. A family of four, I think, can get in for £200, but that's about as cheap as it can get. I was in a £95 seat. The critic opposite me in the aisle was in a £125 seat. Is it worth that? Well, no, because nothing's worth that. But is it a really good show? Is it ramshackle and fun and big? And would even people from out of town, you know, Americans, would they get it? I'd be a bit puzzled. But it's got so many jokes in it that I surrendered to it, even at far too long, at 3 hours.
Fair enough. Cinderella is on at the Palladium until January the 15th. You can still catch St. Joan. You can still, although you might have to watch on NT Live, you can still catch Love, I think, just into early January.
And then it's going to Birmingham as well.
Ah, is it? To the Rep?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you are. You can go to Birmingham. Go to Birmingham and see it. Don't see it here in London. Okay, that's that. Dominic Maxwell, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas. That's it for the Monocle Arts Review with me, Steve Bloomfield. The programme was produced by Holly Fisher and Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow. We're popping down to our local bookshop for some festive book recommendations. But for now, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.